There are two rules in football that over the years have never changed. You're at your most vulnerable after you've just scored, and never leave early. Welcome to episode 216 of the Tireless Den podcast. I'm your host, Mark Mayo, and joining me is, well, it's a real treat this week because we've got two of the finest guests on Reading podcasting history because they've been away over the years, they've come back, and certainly the one man I'm about to introduce now, his comeback has really coincided with the team doing well. And Johnny, I'm happy to give you the credit for the team doing well rather than the team doing well, meaning you come back into the mix.
It's good to hear you say that. You might say that I'm a glory hunter, but I would never put those words in your mouth.
No, well, sadly, while you weren't able to come on the podcast, I was in touch with Johnny, who was classically angry, you could say, during the during the downturn in Reading, but hopefully a bit of an upturn now. And Westy joins us as well. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, the old veteran's back today as well.
Like Charlie Adam, we only get better with age.
Well, yeah, Charlie Adam, of course, featuring in that 1-1 draw with Nottingham Forest on the weekend. If anyone, you know, thought, let's get back into the car park for the last 2 minutes, nothing's going to happen here. Sadly, I mean, well, not sadly for you really, because it's your own decision, but you pretty much missed out on the entire game with the Nottingham Forest goal in the 95th and then Reading equalising in the 96th minute. We'll get into that in the recap, and then obviously mailbag, news bites, a bit of transfer stuff, and two games to look forward to in the preview. So before we crack on to that, I'll just say a quick thank you to our Patreon campaigners who continue to subscribe and just show a little bit of faith in the podcast as we look to hopefully start in the next few weeks. We've got a couple of things to invest in and hopefully improve the quality of the show. And also ZCZ Films, who have come on board last week for a sponsor and hopefully coming on for the rest of the season. So big thank you to those guys. So you'll be hearing sort of in the interludes, and I'll drop in a bit of a name drop every now and again as a sponsor for the podcast. So big thank you to those guys. And we'll move on now to the recap.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Right then, Johnny, it's an interesting game to be talking about because I'm not too sure. In terms of when we look back on this season, we'll probably look back on this game as a game that didn't exist for about 94 minutes and then 2 minutes of utter madness. And I think we're just about on the right side of it, aren't we? When you score the late equaliser, having conceded in the 95th minute, that's the side you want to be on, isn't it? Not the side of scoring first and then letting in, is it?
Yeah, and I think in terms of the context of the match as well, you always look back at these games when you've had a good second half, you tend to feel happier coming out of the match. And certainly in the first half, Nottingham Forest had the better of things and put us under a lot of pressure, and we didn't really have any possession. But I don't know what Mark Bowen said at half time, but he really seemed to put a rocket up them. And then in the second half, we seemed to be the only team that was actually going for the win and actually trying to score and trying to create chances. And so when you come to it in the context of the full 90 minutes, would we have been happy with a draw? I'd have certainly been happy with a draw because Forest up there challenging in the playoffs, I think one of the better teams in terms of their away form. And so, you go to, had you said before the game, a point, would you have taken that? I'd have definitely taken that. And obviously, in the delirious circumstances that it came, then sort of even more so. There's nothing more satisfying than those last-minute winners that come after a last-minute winner. We've had a couple of them in the last decade or so.
Yeah, it's funny. I was thinking before, or I suppose after the game, the last time I can remember, I think in 2005 against Ipswich at home, Darren Bent, I think it was, scored in the last minute. And then Ingemarsson actually popped up at the other end about two minutes later and got an injury time equaliser to the injury time winner. And Westy, this is the sort of moment that I think for this season, actually, I look back on this game and you can kind of add it to the Wigan game where Puskas scored the hat-trick and a couple other examples that we're actually starting to make a few memories this season, which I suppose in the last few years we haven't really. And you can take whether it's a good point or bad point, but it's actually quite nice to be involved in a bit of entertainment every now and again, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great, but I wonder how many people missed it on Saturday. I remember people said it was in the car park. I know a lot of people left early. They normally do anyway. So to miss two goals and all the action was must be disappointing for them. But I think if you look at the stats this year, I think that Reading have scored sort of the most in the last 15 minutes, or if not the most, certainly the second. I know West Brom have got a lot of late goals. But just goes to show that they've got that team spirit back in the fight until the end. And it, like Johnny said, it was a deserved point because I don't think either team deserved to win the game, but neither team really deserved to lose it either.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it, with that goal, that the Forest goal, with the question of whether it was really a corner, the question of whether it went out of play just before the shot gets fired in. Is anyone going to make the case for VAR to be in the Championship to have that goal officially ruled out, or are we just about happy with the circumstances to say in the non-Premier League world, we're actually kind of better off without the video technology? Probably would have spent 3 minutes looking at that and then deciding it might or might not have been a goal.
Well, I don't know about you, Johnny, but from some of the ridiculous VAR decisions this year in the Premier League, I think we're better off without it.
Yeah, I'm certainly one that's happy to keep it out of it. I don't think we need it at every level. And, you know, I think with all of these things, they even out over the course of the season, as is the sort of traditional refrain. So, yeah, look, I mean, at the end of the day, if we'd have come off worse from that, and if we had lost, then I'm sure we'd all be crying for it. But like in the circumstances, I don't think we can have too many complaints, because I'm sure there'll be a decision down the line that goes in our favour like that. So, you know, all these ridiculous handballs and offsides to the millimetre. It's killing the game. And imagine if that goal had been held up for another 2 minutes because of a potential, going out of play. It would have even less people would have been there.
See
the equaliser.
Yeah. Ironically, it'd probably been disallowed and it'd have ended up 0-0 anyway, so the result wouldn't have changed. But that doesn't always happen, does it?
It's funny, isn't it? Because I was thinking, actually, we've not, in terms of, you know, this being the first year of VAR in the Premier League, that sort of stuff, we've not actually had that many controversial decisions for Reading this year. This is the first goal that I can think of off the top of my head that I'm really like, oh, that shouldn't have been given, or, you know, there's a good case for it not to be given. Otherwise, I think we've actually kind of, maybe it's because we're less competitive, but we've sort of stayed controversy-free a lot of this season, haven't we?
Yeah, I think we have in general. I don't seem to remember anything like yourself that sort of sticks in my head. But like I said, our season hadn't really got going until the last sort of 8 weeks. So probably we haven't got a lot to remember so far, as you pointed out earlier.
Yeah, and I think there's also an argument to be made that, you know, I think we're quite happy to be sort of comfortably floating in mid-table at the moment after the last few seasons of wallowing around the bottom or indeed challenging at the top. So there's probably less of those sort of high impact moments that you kind of remember to say, oh, well, you know, if we hadn't scored this one, then we'd have been, even closer to relegation, or, you know, we could have had this moment. So, I'm quite happy to see us where we are at the moment.
I don't know about you two guys, but I'm certainly a lot more excited than I have been for quite some time at the moment, because I think looking at our side, we all knew we had the players, it's whether you could organise them properly. And at the moment, they're doing the job.
Yeah, I definitely agree there. And I think, you know, this is, I think there's two differences to what we had under Jose Gomez and to an extent under previous managers. When Gomez came in, we had the manager bump, and that, you know, that gave us a few good results. But then sort of after six or seven games, we started to get a little bit found out. And Bowen seems to have counteracted that. And I think you've got a big enough body of work now to sort of say, you know, it wasn't just that new manager boost that has taken him forward and got us results. We seem to be playing better, playing with more confidence, and the fans are getting into it. I mean, you know, we've even got the fans singing Mark Bowen's Barmy Army, and he's readily sort of clapping them when we cheer his name. And I think the other thing is as well, we're in these games and we're looking like we deserve to at least get a point or win them. It's not like I felt like under Gomez, there are a few times where we'd win a game or we'd draw a game, but it was patently clear that we didn't deserve to get anything out of it, or we were by far the second best team, or those games that we'd lose 1-0 and we'd throw the kitchen sink at them for the last sort of half an hour, and so you'd feel like we deserve something when in fact it was just us attacking and them happy to defend. So I think in all those cases you feel far better about this team now than we have in a few years, because we're playing well and we're getting results, whereas I think both of those haven't necessarily married up in the last few years.
Yeah, and again, and the goalkeeper as well, and the fact it's gone to a flat back four, and it's sort of some old names in there that have steadied the ship. I think that foundation they've got there now is really good.
With that new manager bounce you're saying, Johnny, I think as well, we had actually lost a few games after, you know, Bowen came in and he started really well, and then we lost to Brentford, Leeds and Birmingham, and actually that was the moment we all kind of looked around and thought, oh God, this is a bit shaky. But since then, we've actually bounced back up, and that's the thing, that's the difference, isn't it? That's the key sign of a consistency. And you say, Westy, as well, about the flat back four. He's not been afraid to say, you know, this is a point, we're going to take the point. One of the signs as well is that you can see with the goal actually on the weekend, Blackett, who's, you know, had a brilliant bit of form, we'll talk about him a bit more in news bites because he's involved in a bit of transfer gossip, but plays a brilliant ball forward to Jordan Obita. And he's put Jordan Obita on left wing. He put it against Blackpool as well, and he put him on the off the bench against Forest at left wing. And that sort of, he's not afraid to put a slightly more defensive player or defensive-minded player into an attacking position just to, you know, it just offers a bit more of a steady ship. And how long have we spoken about with players like Mo Barrow, Sonny Aluko, you could say sort of Yaku Mate on the wing as well, aren't defensive-minded wide players. And it does just give you a bit more surety, a bit more of a sure footing. And Westy, I don't know what you think with the formations at the moment, but that 3-5-2, it felt to me like it was overcomplicating things a lot. And that on its day, on its pomp, it was brilliant. But when it wasn't on its day and teams found it out, there was nothing to it. But obviously when you're playing a 4-4-2 or 4-4-1-1, it's just a bit simpler for the players to get right, isn't it?
It is a bit simpler. Okay, it's something they know. And also players have come into form as well. I remember when I was on the pod earlier in the season, I was criticising Pelé. I said I didn't know what he brought to the party, really. But he's been excellent the last few weeks. And he's made a decent screen in front of those backs, the two centre-backs. And I think also changing the formation had a lot to do with Gunter coming into the side because he can't play as a wing-back, to my mind. He's not. He hasn't got the quality going forward. And he tends to sort of stay a bit more deep than some of the others do. So him coming in sort of forced his hand to a certain extent, and it's worked out really well. And like I say, it does give you the ability then to have Adam and Swift, Najaria, more sort of, not luck, I would say luxury players, they put in their work rate, don't get me wrong, but especially with Adam, he's a player that can ball play, but his movement around the pitch is not great anymore. But to a certain extent, when you've got Pelé in there with him, you can carry that for 75 minutes, you know, like they have been doing. And I'm still critical of, I don't think he does enough. And I'm worried now that Joao up front is not going to be there. You haven't got a focal point. I said, again, when I was on the pod earlier in the season, that if you're playing him, you have to play him up front, right at the top, not in a number 10 role, because he doesn't put the work right in. But what he does do is holds the ball really well and brings other players in. Now, without him there, Puskas and Baldock, I don't think they can fill that role. So that's a concern. But like I said, my players are coming to form. His hand's been forced and it's turned out all right. And like I say, it's steady. They're not conceding any goals and we're still scoring plenty. So it's good. I think, you know what, the more I watch him, the more confident I am that I can get somewhere near them playoffs before the end of the season, if not in them.
And Johnny as well, when you know, Westy says about Gunter there, and I know that you've said quite a few times to, you know, whether it's on a group chat or something to me, that when Yeardon's playing, he obviously gets a lot of plaudits because he's a very good attacking right back and he's a brilliant wing back getting up and down the pitch, but he was often the man who was arriving just a second too late in defensive positions. And with Gunter coming back into the team, you know, we're top of the form table for the last six games, two conceded in that. Gunter is a different type of defender and it actually kind of suits what we're doing at the moment, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think the word that you'd say about how we've played under Mark Bowen since he's come in really is pragmatism and being pragmatic. I've talked numerous times on here and on Twitter about how under Gomez and under previous managers, Yeardon's attacking ability is undoubted. He's fantastic at charging forward and putting those crosses in the box, but once he got found out and you put the ball in behind him, it was an easy route to go for teams and they would use that multiple times. Whereas with Gunter, who is a far more, like you say, defensive minded, but in that same way, I mean, he has got forward at times and put in a few decent crosses as well. And you've got obviously Blackett on the other wing, who, you know, is more of a centre-back left-back than a left-back, if that sort of makes sense. He's far more defensively minded. But again, he's got the licence when necessary to come forward. And I think that's exactly what Mark Bowen has brought in, that pragmatic sort of base or core behind. And obviously, Raphael is making the important saves when it matters. I mean, he doesn't have many... Another thing, he doesn't have many saves to make these days, but the saves he does make are so important. You remember at Fulham a couple of weeks ago when he makes that incredible triple save, and obviously the one he made against Forest as well, from Graben, that one-on-one, and then Moore's there on the line as well. That, like you say, that solid base and conceding, what is it, two goals in the last six or seven games, if you don't include the Blackpool match. Once you've got that solid base with Pelé and Adam just in front and that's solid core, then you can allow players like Swift to pick a pass, like Ajaria to do his tricks, like Mate to drift in and get a header, and Baldock to to make those runs in behind as well. And so it's uncomplicated. The defenders are being told to defend, the midfielders are being told to do their jobs, and the attackers are being told to attack. And you know, it sounds simple, but that is what is producing the winning form at the moment.
Absolutely. And we'll hear from Mark Bowen now as we get his take on the 1-1 draw against Forest, and then we'll jump over to the mailbag. Well, we're talking about the striking situation because Lucas Shaw, as Wesley alluded to, is out for a couple of months.
He hooked it back into play for Ben Watson to score. Good strike by him, but Ben came to me after the game and said that the fella told him it was all their player and said he's out of play. And the linesman standing looking along the goal line. So I find that a bit strange. Listen, I haven't seen it back on the television, so I might be being a bit harsh, but you know, when all your team runs to the linesman, you sense that something's wrong. But as I say, it would have been easy for heads to really drop and accept our fate, but we're not going to. This group of players are not going to accept their fate. And I told him after the game, you know, we're in that race for the playoffs, and you know, I'm confident now that we can really, really play a strong part in that race. You know, we've got to have a little bit of luck in terms of injuries and everything else as well, but the character we've got, the ability we've got, there's no reason why we can't really push on.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Rs!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Right, then, first question is Simeon Pickup, the editor of the Tyler Sten, who asks, do we need a replacement for Zhao, or should we make the most of the options we currently have? El Jin's Jericho, great username, by the way, adds on to that, is Glenn Murray the answer? It's funny, isn't it? Because we've got the sort of strikers that we've got. Well, I would say they're kind of similar, really. Yao, as you alluded to, Westy, is a bit more of a sort of hold-up type of player. Puskas is a penalty box finisher. Loader, a bit of a penalty box finisher. Bulldog, I think probably Bulldog works best in a two when he has someone, you know, to buzz around and to annoy the defenders. But in terms of Zhao, he's only out for 2 months. And Westy, do you think that it is best to go into the transfer market to you know, secure the sort of loan player, or ultimately have we just got enough players to sort of stick through it?
I think the way they're playing at the moment, you need to have someone who is a focal point, your Jan Kerbergen type player. Again, perfect, the guy from Brighton. We had him before. I think he's excellent at what he does. We know he's not got the most mobile player in the world, but he certainly scores lots of goals. He's been scoring in the Premier League up till recently when he's not been playing. I think if you really seriously want to get in the playoffs, I think you have to replace Zhao, because I don't think there's anyone else there that can do it. And I don't think they want to go back to a 5-3-2. I don't think the other two strikers can play up front on their own. They're too weak, Bulldog especially. Like I say, unless he's got someone to play off, he's not largely pointless. And Puskas as well, I don't think he can hold a ball well enough or cause too many problems. He's not quick, is he? Let's face it, we've seen Puskas now. He's not the sort of player who can play over the top and he's going to run away from defenders. So you can't even play the ball over the top of the centre-backs. And he doesn't hold the ball very well. And I think if you need that focal point in that Reading team, otherwise I think we're going to start struggling to score goals.
Johnny, we've had Mate played on the wing recently. Is there a case for Mate being that man? The problem is for me is that then you have to play a winger, and Gav McCleary can't necessarily do 90 minutes as well as he used to. You know, Obita's only really going to play on the left. Lucas Boyer is not a brilliant footballer. You kind of leave yourself a bit open then, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he'll move Mate up front, simply because I seem to remember in some post-match interview a couple of weeks ago, he said that's Mate's preferred position out on the wing. And you can kind of see that with the way he, you know, he's a powerful player who likes to sort of run at defenders on that wing and cut in and get the shot away. Or equally, if you've got a cross coming in from the left wing, he likes to arrive late and attack them. So I don't think he would necessarily put Mate up front out of choice. Like you say, I think it would be a choice of Puskas or Bulldog. And I think, to be honest, in the way that we're playing with that kind of one up front, then I think you've got enough there. If you want to try and gamble on making the playoffs and getting into that, I mean, it's a twofold gamble, really. Is that one is that you're going to keep this form up and make the playoffs, because I think any team can, you know, have a good run and go unbeaten for 7 or 8 matches, but then to do that basically for the rest of the season is kind of what we'd need to do. And then obviously to win the playoff gamble, which we do not have the best experience of doing. So I think there's that. And I think the other thing that is probably creeping on people's minds is the whole FFP thing. Do we want to necessarily put another £2 or 3 million or however much it might be in wages / transfer fees to gamble on that? Whereas with the whole rolling amount, we could potentially invest that next year. It's really tough to say. And I think you'd almost want to get to the end of January before making this decision, see if we are any closer. You know, we're 6 points off the playoff at the moment. If we get to the end of January and we're 3 points off the playoffs, then you'd probably say, yeah, let's go for it. If we get to the end of January and we're 9-10 points off the playoffs, then you might think about, right, let's instead sort of prepare for next year. That would be my classic Johnny sits on the fence answer.
Also, now, I don't think that Maite can play that role. I've seen him play up front on his own. And he, again, for a big man, he gets pushed off the ball way too easily. His hold up play is poor. So there is no natural replacement for Joe, I don't think, except for someone like Glenn Murray. So if you are going to do it, I think that is a great replacement. But it is a short-term thing, like you just said there, Johnny. You get him here for next to nothing and you give him a year's contract, or you get him on loan till the end of the season. I think if they want to seriously go up, I think they might have to do it, whether they will or not. I suppose time will tell.
Well, funnily enough, it's Nottingham Forest who are supposedly the most linked club with Glenn Murray at the moment. Dan Wimbush, the founder of Tylersend, emails in saying, is there room for Rinomota in this system? We were talking earlier about how Pele has really sort of taken that position as his own at the moment alongside Charlie Adam, who certainly looks like he isn't going to get dropped at any point soon. And the thing is, I mean, Johnny, the thing is for me with Rinomota is he's not quite shown the sort of ability to drive forward and be a box-to-box midfielder like we saw so well last season. So is it a problem that he's not in the team? No, because we're winning. But is it also a sign that maybe he's going to turn into the sort of player that we might mark down as a bit of a one-season wonder?
I think it's a bit too early to write him off, although you do have to say that, yeah, we do tend to hype up our own players a bit too much at times. But then, you know, it is a squad game these days. We're going to be playing sort of two games a week pretty much for the rest of the season. Obviously, we've got this rescheduled Forest game as well. If we go through to the next round of the Cup away at Blackpool, then, you know, we are going to need those reinforcements, because I don't think you're going to have Charlie Adam playing. Well, he didn't even get 90 minutes on Saturday, did he? So there's certainly no way he's going to make 90 minutes twice in a week. So I think you're definitely going to have a place for him in the team. Certainly when we go to tougher teams like Leeds away and, you know, potentially some other games against those teams that are challenging at the top, then you might want to get a bit more dynamism in there, put Rinomota alongside Pele rather than having someone like Charlie Adam, or, you know, maybe you might sacrifice someone else in the midfield. So I think there are certainly ways to get him in the team. And like you said, with the shifts from 4-2-3-1 and 4-4-2, Mark Bowen doesn't seem to be rigidly sticking to one system. He seems to be picking a team to win each match, which is, I think, the best way to manage the squad at the moment. Keep everyone happy and give yourself the best chance, obviously.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough, really. You're right. It's a long steep season even from here on in. And I suppose even there's a relative chance that if we do want to sign a couple of players in January, that a centre mid might be that sort of position, because we haven't got, you know, if we're going to play Swift and Ajaria and players like that further up the pitch, we haven't got a load of players. Say if, you know, Pele gets injured, then we do kind of only have the one man left in that role. Chris Barker saying, a bit annoyed we conceded, but if they hadn't have scored, would we? I think, to be honest, a quick answer to that is that the corner would have got cleared and then that would have been full time, so probably not. Ashley asking, did Forest win it? Daniel Curtis saying, did that actually happen? When will my throat stop hurting? And is it 2 points dropped or a point gained? Westy, we probably would say that it's a point gained at the moment, purely because Forest, I mean, in my opinion, Forest are a decent team. It wasn't a game that we had a massive grip on them and, you know, knocking down the door for the 90 minutes. And in the circumstances, when you concede late, you've got to take anything you can get.
Yeah, it sort of feels like a win, doesn't it, when that happens? Because you go from, oh, we've lost this game, to all of a sudden you see the crowd scenes of sort of jumping in the crowd and that for a draw, if it had been just a normal draw, you wouldn't have seen it, would you? It's just the excitement at the end. I think it feels like a win. Is it 2 points drop? No, I think it's a good result. Home to Forest. There's not many teams that have beat them this year. They're, like I say, they're up there. It's a good point. It keep the, keeps the wins rolling, keeps the, well, the no defeats rolling. I think if you earmarked it earlier in the season or even last couple of weeks, you'd said, I'll tell you, we'll take a draw in that. And that's what we got. So I think it's a good result, really.
Yeah, Cavs for me is a sort of typical one. Yes, it's a home game, and yes, you can think, oh, we need to win every home game, but we're not actually that good. So,
if you you wouldn't have gone to Fulham and expected us to win. So this is championship football for you, isn't it? Sometimes you get them, sometimes you don't. But to not lose is good enough. Just keeps the points ticking on.
Yeah, and I think that's Bowen's perspective as well, to be honest. Hugh rounds off the questions then, saying, as we're playing Forest away very shortly, brackets, if it doesn't bloody flood again, what do we need to change to win against them, and what will they be looking to change to counter us? Johnny, you said that it's kind of a first half them, second half us kind of game. So do you see, you know, as we're only going up in a few weeks' time, is it going to possibly play out like that again? Or do you think that we've, and to be fair, under Bowen generally, we've actually kind of gone and shut up shop away, haven't we?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because it felt like in the first half they were the ones pressing us and not giving us any time on the ball. And basically we were just sort of knocking it forward to no one whenever we had the ball because we didn't have time. Whereas in the second half, it seemed as though those roles basically changed and we weren't giving them any time on the ball. Now, I don't think it's necessarily a very sensible tactic to try and do that away unless you're Man City or Liverpool. You don't see many teams go away from home and relentlessly press and try and dominate possession, because that's simply not the way to go. I think you'll probably see Forest keep up that intensity that they had in the first half in the second half. And like I said, it's easier to do that at home. You've got the fans behind you and you've got that kind of territorial advantage. I think for us, it'll probably be, like you say, defensively trying to draw them on and using the pace of Puskas. Now, I don't think, like you said, Westie, I don't think Puskas has that raw pace, but what he's got is the strength as well. So he'll probably try and run the channels. Same with Bulldog. He's got that, again, he's not the paciest, but he's got that intelligence, knows the runs to make, and try and drive us up the field that way. And so I think that will be our tactic in terms of when we go away, kind of. Yeah, we're going to have to absorb a lot of pressure, I think, because they are a promotion chasing side. But there's no reason that we can't go up there and get 3 points. There's certainly nothing to fear from what we saw on Saturday.
It's getting our first goal, isn't it? If you can get the first goal, you can win the game. If when you drop behind away from home and you're chasing the game all of a sudden, then it becomes difficult. Reading have been quite lucky, or they've done well recently to score that first goal, and that's what improves your form, doesn't it? You don't have to chase matches all of a sudden.
And looking at going up to the City Ground as well, actually, Nottingham Forest are a lower mid-table for home form, having only won 6 of their 12 games. Also quite low scoring for those who like to put the both teams to score Acker on, so hashtag gamble away for that. But yeah, Forest don't look to be a brilliant team at home. They're certainly, if you say they're 14th best in terms of home form and 3rd best in terms of away form. So you could make a case that we've actually had the more difficult of the game so far, and hopefully we've managed to make something happen there. We'll talk about the couple of games that we've got this week in a little bit, but let's jump over now to News Bites and talk about what's been going on as we're now almost halfway through the January transfer window.
Stay tuned for all the latest from around the Medeski Stadium and the Championship with News Bites.
Right, guys, if I'd have said to you that Tyler Blackett was going to be leaving the club this January about a month ago, you probably wouldn't have been too disappointed or surprised. But here we are, 3 assists and an almost goal later as he hit the post on the weekend. And suddenly he's of huge importance and also of great admiration from Turkish football clip teams. Fenerbahce are the latest team to have. Apparently last week there was reports in Turkey that a deal was relatively close. That did say that there's been no transfer fee agreed with the teams, which would have to be there for a January move. He can agree a contract now in Turkey to move in the summer. And there's reports in the UK now saying that there's been a new offer, a new contract offered from the club, from Reading. So, I mean, Westie, Blackett suddenly looks like a good player. We've got, you know, 2.5 left-backs if we're going to start playing Obito on the wing. And, you know, it's actually quite an interesting battle, this, is to see whether Reading are really going to value a player who has been generally OK, but is now suddenly, as I say, of huge importance.
Yeah, but I've said loads of times about Blackett, if he could just cut out his switching off, which he used to do quite a lot, especially when he first came to the club, then he is a good player. And you've got to admit, he is a good player to have around the squad because he's useful in a couple of positions. And he's the sort of player that when you look to the bench, you think, oh, that's right, we've got Blackett there. He can cover a number of positions, you know. I think it'd be sad to see him go, but will it have any major impact on anybody? I don't think so. Personally, if I was Tyler Blackett, I would probably want to move to Turkey. He's been here quite a while now, and your football career is quite short, isn't it? So maybe he wants to sell on his back and to enjoy a few years in their Premier League.
I mean, I'm kind of the mind that if he's going to go, then letting him go at the end of the season is probably the right idea. We're not going to get a huge fee for him because he's, you know, they can sign him up for free if they want. There is a danger, and there's that nagging doubt in the back of my mind. If we agree to, you know, I don't know what his demands are, but let's say his demands are to make him one of the best paid defenders at the club or one of the best paid players. Yes, over the last four games, he's shown that he is one of our most useful players, but he's not worth giving a huge contract to at the moment. And I think there's 2.5 years was the talk at the moment. He's not an old player, not particularly young, but I still think that's a bit much, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and I don't think, to be honest, I don't think it makes sense for either side to renew the contract, which sounds a bit weird because Tyler Blackett will want to be playing week in, week out. And I think you've seen over the last however long he's been here that he's not the kind of player that you'd want week in, week out necessarily. I don't think suddenly he's going to be showing incredible form or has turned a corner sort of thing. Like you said, Westy, he's the sort of player who you see him on the bench and think, right, yeah, he can be useful off the bench. But I don't think he necessarily is a week in, week out starter, certainly for this team. And he's never shown that form. And like you say, for us, for him, he'll want to go and play every week and be a player who gets in the team every week. The only thing I'd say from our point of view is we've also got Jordan Obita expiring at the end of the season and Omar Richards. I certainly don't think you want to rely on him in a championship promotion battle, if that's where we actually are, even though he is sort of only still 21, 22. So from my point of view, like you said, I think you'd keep him until the end of the season and then look for an upgrade at left back in the summer. I don't think I'd renew Blackett and I don't think I'd renew Obita either, just judging on what we've seen over the last month or so from him, although obviously he has managed to work his way back from, you know, some quite serious injuries.
Things with left backs are very difficult to replace, aren't they? There's not a lot of them of championship standards. You could say, actually, we could go and get him. So to let two go could be an error.
Yeah, I'd probably keep Obita at the moment. As you say, with the knee injury, you do have that sense of, I suppose you don't have to give him that much money, being cynical about it. And Richards, I do think Richards is a good player, but there is that question again of will he kick on from, at the moment, you'd say he's probably a lower championship player. Has he got it in him to kick? He's still quite young. Is he going to kick on and become a higher championship player? And if you think about the sort of left backs we got promoted with over the years, we've actually been very fortunate that the two left backs we had in those two promotion teams, Nicky Shaw and Ian Hart, were set piece specialists. So we didn't really think of them too much. Oh, if they made a defensive error or got caught out, we didn't really think, oh, well, you have to get them out of the team. Whereas with Richards, he's not got that. On the ball attacking, he's fine, but he's not got that sort of extra X factor, has he?
No, he hasn't, but he has got good energy. And like I said, I've seen him, well, I've watched him this year, and I think he's had a lot of very good games where he's played very well. But because of his age, then they do sort of shift in and out of form. But there's much more to come from him. But would you put him as first choice next year? Probably not.
Yeah, I'd agree there. I think if we see this as a side that's going to be challenging at the top, then I think at the very least you'd want a top championship left back. Because I think if you were to look at our side at the moment, then you'd probably say that whoever you had on the pitch, whether it was Obita, Richards or Blackett, that's probably the weak link in the team. Just thinking off the top of my head, I'd say that is probably the weakest position or the weakest player in the team. So I think either way, whoever stays and whoever goes, you're probably going to be wanting to look to upgrade that position.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And at the moment, in terms of January rumours for incomings to Reading, we've heard of John Laurent from Shrewsbury is potentially of interest to a few championship teams which Reading have been named, and a bloke called Matthew Riddenton from Newcastle Jets in the Aussie A-League is apparently on trial with the club at the moment. I won't press the pair of you for your knowledge on, to be honest, the Shrewsbury League 1 or 2. Sounds awful asking that. But
yeah, as we both frantically Google these players.
And the Aussie A-League is another. I mean, he's played about 10 games, New Zealand international riddance this season, but he's apparently for a week trial at the club or an English club. We don't know exactly if it's Reading, it's just been reports. So two players that have left the club in the last week, though, is Josh Barrett, the academy product, who's actually, I think he's about 22 now, so just about leaving the echelons of being a young player, has gone off to Bristol Rovers, and Zhao Virginia has gone back to Everton. I don't have any real problem with either of those two leaving. I think we all know that Virginia might be a good keeper in a few years, but he's not championship quality yet. And as for Barrett, I think that's the more interesting one, because we had a piece on the week from Sim on the Tarlist then, who said that the pair of them were kind of victims of squad planning and that sort of thing. And to be honest, as much as, you know, Sim isn't here to defend the article, so I don't want to go into it too much. But certainly in terms of Barrett, I think he's just a victim of not being good enough, really. And as you know, it's always a bit more painful to say when you've got an academy product who made his debut years ago now as the sort of under-18s captain, who was the next big thing, and for whatever reason it hasn't happened. It didn't happen on loan for him. When I've watched him this season, particularly in that Fulham game, which he got subbed off at half-time, I honestly, it just felt like he was just out of his depth. And Westy, do you feel like either of those two players are really, you know, players that will regret letting go?
No, I think Barrett, I seem to remember, I think he played against Sheffield Wednesday, did he, at the start of the season? I remember then saying that he looked completely out of his depth. He had a couple of moments in the game where I thought, oh, actually, no, he's sort of getting into it. But it just sort of went past him, the match. And then, again, the best game he's had this year was at Plymouth, but they're two sort of runs down the ladder. So if you can't do it against them, then you've got no chance of getting a championship side. I just don't think, like you said, he's 22 now. If he was good enough, he'd be in the side. And we've had numerous managers he's been here for, and none of them have picked him. So that tells you we really need to know. But also, on the flip side, I think Bristol Rovers, great move for him, not too far down the road. And if he's going to make it and come back, then great. But good luck to him. But like I said, at 22, he should be starting, and he's just not.
Johnny, you're going to be saying in a few years' time, when Zhao Virginia is the Everton first choice goalkeeper, well, if only we'd given him a few more chances, or is ultimately this is a player who's just not ready for this level, isn't it?
Yeah, I think. I mean, obviously, he didn't get off to the best start. In his first game when he had that absolute howler, and basically forced us to try and sign Raphael or to try and desperately find another goalie. Yeah, you know, I think especially at the age he is, 18, 19, you don't necessarily want to put into that cauldron in such a position of pressure where if you make a mistake, there is only one person to blame in terms of being in goal. You know, if you're a centre-back, then you can possibly get away with a mistake slightly easier because the focus won't necessarily be on you. So, yeah, good luck to him. But I think either lower down the rung or perhaps just a bit more under 23 level. And I think with Barrett, yeah, like you say, he might turn into the next sort of Jack Stacey, who needs that regular playing time to go out on loan, really hone his craft, really decide what kind of a player he is, and then sort of and then grow into it. And because I think as ever with these transfers, we don't necessarily look at it from the player's point of view. And if Bristol Rovers had come and said, look, we can guarantee you that you're going to play every week, you're not just going to get the odd 10, 15 minutes and play in the FA Cup, then he's going to say, yes, I'm 21, 22, this is what I need so that I don't stagnate and my career doesn't stagnate. And so from his point of view, I think it's a fantastic move. And yeah, like we say, if he proves everyone wrong and goes up into the Premier League in 4 or 5 years, like players like Stacey and Mikel Antonio have done, then fair play to him. He absolutely deserves all the plaudits. But for now, you can't really justify keeping him around, and he can't justify staying around.
I didn't comment on the goalkeeper there, Mark. I was going to say the same thing as Johnny, really. I think it was that first game, that first mistake he made, shot his confidence completely. And once he'd made that mistake, he was always chasing a decent performance, if that makes sense. And it never really came, because the harder he tried, the more mistakes he tended to make. And I just think, really, Reading should have asked him to go back quite a while ago, because there was no room for him to come back into that side. Because I think if you've got a goalkeeper that's made two mistakes behind you, they're very young, the back four automatically start being wary of that and worried. and the fans were worried, and the young lad and his confidence was going to get shot, and it was shot, I think, and that's why he needed to go back to Everton. And again, he might turn into a really great goalkeeper, but from what I see of him, he wasn't good enough to be here at the moment.
Yeah, the mistakes against Hull and Wolves away, I think, were the particularly bad ones after that sort of after that start. And then, if you're going to keep him at the club, we've got Luke Southwood back now, who was on the bench in the FA Cup. You've got Vito Minoni back in the team, not back in the team, but back in the club after his loan. And there's not sure that he's whether he's going to stay or not. I think he's out of contract in the summer anyway. So we'll round off the news bites then with a quick look at the other teams in the Reading Football Club. A new contract actually for Farrah Williams in the women's team. They started 2020 with a 3-1 loss at Chelsea, then they won 1-0 against Birmingham on the weekend. They're fourth in the WSL at the moment. They're miles off third because, you know, Arsenal, Man City and Chelsea are just too good. But if they get fourth in the kind of best of the rest race, then that'll be a big achievement for the women's team. Under 23s, they lost 4-2 at West Brom on Monday. Lidl and Neves scoring. Thierry Neves actually signed a new contract in the week. They're facing West Ham about now, so I'm not going to spend too much time trying to find that score for you, because you can pick that up on the Tala Send Twitter once you've listened to this. Under-18s lost 4-1 at Leicester on Saturday. They next play West Ham, and they're seventh in the Premier League South. So back to the first team and a big match preview for two quite interesting games we've got coming up in the next few days.
You're listening to the Tilehurst End podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.
Tuesday, 7:45 at Bloomfield Road. I think it's called Bloomfield Road now. It could have got changed to any sort of, you know, Bet 3675 or something, a stadium or something. I'm not sure if it's called Menderhose Bingo Stadium, whatever now. But as far as I'm aware, it's Bloomfield Road, 7:45 Tuesday, the FA Cup third round replay, Reading against Blackpool. And, well, guys, what's the plan here? Johnny, do we go as a game to take seriously? Blackpool have had the weekend off because this was the one they were going to play Bury, who obviously aren't in the league anymore. They're still six games without a win. You know, we're five unbeaten away, actually. They're pretty mid-table for their sort of league form at home. So, Johnny, do you think that this is a game that we should actually be a bit wary of?
I think Mark Pragmatism Bowen, as I'm going to start nicknaming him, it's going to catch on, definitely. has made it quite clear in his first few games and in his in the first game and in his press conferences that not necessarily he doesn't care about the FA Cup, but his priority obviously for now is the league, both in terms of hauling us clear of the relegation zone and potentially putting in a playoff push. And I think he even made a reference to that in his post-match interview with Tim Deller on Saturday. I think he basically sort of said it's not really a game that we want to have right now. So I think you will see a similar team to what we saw in the first game. I certainly don't think you're going to see any first team or any sort of entrenched first team players. You might see the odd one in there, but I think it to a large extent it is going to be the under 18s and the under 23s competing there. Maybe you might see Puskas get a run out if he needs fitness, but you know, aside from that, I think it's largely going to be the same sort of rotated side that we saw in the first leg.
Westy, we've got a game against Cardiff or Carlisle at home if we win, which, I mean, as a FA Cup fourth round tie, is as winnable as you can reasonably expect it to be. So is there actually that temptation, therefore, to hopefully take Blackpool a bit seriously, take the fourth round seriously, and then all of a sudden, I think that's the last 16, isn't it? The fifth round, maybe you get another good side. Suddenly, you've actually built up a cup run, haven't you?
Yeah, again, I thought that they should have seen Blackwolf at home. I think the mistake he made was playing the young centre-back, Burley, was it, at the back there? Although he started the game quite well, the other team soon realised that their big man up front could bully him. And he kept drifting over towards him. And that's where the second game come. And basically, whenever they run at Reading, they look like a threat. I said to my boys who sat next to me, I said, he needs to take that young lad off. I'm not saying he's a bad player. I'm just saying it was a bit step too far for him at his age. And he got bullied out of the match. I think if he keeps the core strong, there's no reason why they can't go up there and win it. Like I said, there's goals in the team. It's all right playing the youngsters, but if you're putting youngsters through the middle, I think we'll get beat. I think he needs to make sure that centre-back, Miazga's fine. Personally, I'd have put, during that first game, I'd have put Blackett on and started him at centre back. Just had two strong centre backs. If they do that, there's no reason why they can't fill the gaps on the wings and just have a strong core, and they'll win that game. If he plays young centre backs, they get beat. It's as simple as that. Because Walker's poor now. Walker's a dreadful goalkeeper. Every time I watch him, he's made me cry. So poor. So sending Virginia back might have been a mistake, because Walker is no backup. Believe me.
No, and I'm just.
Might sound a bit harsh, but.
it's a fair point, really, because the thing is with Sam Walker is that he got bought in as the kind of the archetypal Clement, Ron Gourlay, old Chelsea boy signing. And we actually thought League Two goalkeeper's got a bit about him, maybe. But we've just watched him unfold as a not very useful asset who has actually got a contract for another 18 months. So I'd be curious to see whether Luke Southwood is going to manage to dislodge him. And curious to see whether they might just play Vito Minoni for the hell of it. Because we pay him and all that sort of stuff. And then after that...
I think the only thing you'd want on Minoni is, I believe, being a Football Manager expert, that if he were to play for Reading, then he couldn't play for anyone else until the summer, because you can only play for two clubs in any 12-month period.
That is a good point. And also, you might need international clearance. That's a good point, actually. So maybe it's Luke Southwood will get the nod, and I certainly wouldn't be unhappy to see that. Never seen him play, to be honest. But as you say, Sam Walker just isn't good enough for Reading Football Club at the moment. Certainly... expect the first team to be back for Millwall away on Saturday, and this looks like a really tough game. And hopefully, it's the sort of game that Mark Bowen's probably the right man to be in charge for, because he can hopefully get us ready for a battle. Millwall have only lost 6 games all season in the Championship, so a bit of a drawing side, but a very difficult team to beat. Certainly away from, certainly down at their stadium. Having said that, they lost to Barnsley there recently, so they can be got at. They're 8th, they're 5 points clear of Reading. And, well, Westy, what do you kind of see coming out of this one?
Well, again, my concern is the fact that they've got two big, strong centre-backs. We know all about them because they've played for us, up against Baldock and Puskas. I think they might have an easy day there. Whether the midfield could be too strong for them, because we know we've got good players in midfield and they can create something out of nothing and score us a goal. Then I think the only concern is the fact that the two centre-backs might have it a little bit easier against Reading. If we try and play the ball forward as directly as we have been in the last few three or four matches. That's my concern. Millwall are pretty decent at home. They've had a half-decent season. They're a steady Eddie Championship side, and on their day, they beat anyone, like most of them. I hope we can get the first goal and sort of make them have to come onto us, and that's where we can be dangerous. But I still think Reading should have enough to get something out of it, whether it be a draw or a win.
On that note, Johnny, I would say that if I was a gambling man, this is the game I'd avoid massively, because it is entirely on that spectrum of Millwall could turn up, we could turn up. You've got two managers who are quite happy to take the point when necessary, but quite similar, I suppose, in a lot of ways, Guy Rowett and Mark Bowen. And so really, this one, you kind of, if I offered you a point now, would you be happy with it?
I think so. I think, going back to the old adage of take a point away and win your home games, and that will get you into contention. I think as long as we keep that unbeaten run going, then keep the confidence around the place, then really sort of build momentum going into the second half of the season. Obviously we've got a few tough games coming up in terms of Forest away and Cardiff away, and then we've got Bristol at home in between that as well. So I think maintaining that sort of unbeaten record would be good. And I think the one thing that you say about this team is they don't look like the sort of team that's going to lose 3 or 4-0, do they? I mean, when we go 1-0 down, we've never particularly looked like collapsing or anything like that. And I think it's a credit to Mark Bowen that obviously we've only lost 3 games under him, but they've all only been by 1 goal. I think had we gone into some other matches under previous managers and like gone 1-0 down at Brentford or 1-0 down at home to Leeds, then you'd really start fearing the worst in terms of what it will do for the mental side of the team. But Mark at least seems to be able to prepare them mentally. Look, if we go 1-0 down, it doesn't matter. We can still find our way into the game.
Yes, and that's the difficult point now where I have to ask you boys for your predictions for the Millwall game. We'll skip Blackpool as it's not league, so we won't drop that into the prediction league. The standings at the moment, Handbags is drawing 9 points at the moment, Wim on 10. Westy yourself, you've got 11 points at the moment. Then we've got a three-way tie in second with Johnny, Sim and Ollie on 14. I extended my league this week, actually, with Mystic Mark getting a 1-1 draw against Forest. So I've now got 26 points, which is...
How many second?
Wow.
So that's 14 points is second place and 26 on first. Really. So,
right, what about Christmas?
Now is the time, really. So, Johnny, if you want to...
No, you can go first.
Okay, fair. I will say a 1-0 defeat at Millwall, as the absolutely right, the person to lay their cards down first. I'm going to say a 1-0 defeat because I think that unbeaten runs, you know, the longer they go on, the more likely they are to end, if you know what I mean. They can only last so long, and at some point, some team is going to beat you. And I think, you know, the Blackpool game is probably going to be irrelevant for what happens on Saturday, but... You know, it just feels to me like the sort of game that we might struggle to score in, and I think they will score, and therefore 1-0 defeat.
Okay, I'll go for a 1-1 draw. I think the unbeaten run can continue. I know that Millwall can be a bit of a cauldron to go to at the best of times, but like I said, I think Bowen has instilled confidence and that little bit of fighting spirit in this team that they're not gonna, you know, they're not gonna go to a place like the Den and, you know, suddenly sort of get cold feet or, you know, get rattled. And so, yeah, I think a battling 1-1 draw is what I take at the moment.
What do you think, Wester?
I'll go 0-0. A boring 0-0. I can't see us bullying their two centre backs. The only concern I will have is that Cooper will score a header, so I'll stick with 0-0, I think.
Yeah, Cooper towering header at the far post, leaping over the Liam Moore player that we thought we could replace him with, who's about 4 inches smaller, would be pretty typical. And as you've heard on the prediction front, I would actually say that Ollie was very unlucky on the weekend because he had 0-0 for Forest, which if he had blown the whistle at 95 minutes when, you know, on the dot, just as the referee had given 5 minutes stoppage time, he'd have won it. But as it happens, had to settle for a point.
I had us losing, I think, so I'm even unluckier there.
Yeah, exactly. You could have cashed out. Bookies would have handed out the cash.
I wouldn't have had time.
So you're very close there. But that's the nature of the prediction league. And as I can tell you that as I have such a big lead that there is absolutely no skill in it whatsoever, and that it is all absolute luck, and that my fantasy league and my Super Six predictions are going absolutely terribly. So it's just a case to keep guessing until you get something right, I think. And luckily, as we go into these two games, certainly Reading have not been guessing at the moment. They seem to be a team with a lot of plan about them, a lot of decision, a lot of tactics. So, Westy and Johnny, thank you very much for popping on this week and talking about, you know, an entertaining draw, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, certainly for the last couple of minutes.
And certainly an entertaining draw for those who actually stay to the end, which is certainly the message. As usual on this podcast, isn't I was going to actually call this week's show Never Leave Early, but I used that a few months ago for when I think we got a late draw at Swansea early in the season. So not today is the title of this podcast, and not today Reading lose their unbeaten run. We'll take it to Blackpool and Millwall in the coming days. It's certainly going to continue getting a big old test, but it survived bigger tests so far. So hopefully there's a bit of optimism in the air. We'll be back next week for another edition of the Tile SM podcast. Thank you for listening, and come on, you ass. You smile, funny how the crumbs always leave a trail.
even when it's